So we're glad you're here. You can reach us via email anytime at currentstate@wkar.org. At the top of the show, the U.S. Supreme Court updated the national debate on affirmative action in a ruling yesterday. Analysts say the court effectively raised the bar on affirmative action programs without undoing them. By a 7-1 margin, it ordered a lower court to more closely study the impact of a race-neutral admissions program in Texas. And here to help us better understand the ruling and its impact is Phil Pacillo, MSU law professor and Supreme Court watcher. Hi, Phil.
Hi, Mark.
Before we get into the specifics of the Supreme Court's decision yesterday, it would be helpful to understand a little more about the important cases that have built precedent for this ruling. Help us get a sense of how affirmative action has evolved in the eyes of the U.S. Supreme Court.
Sure. Well, I think you have to go back at least as far as Brown versus Board of Education, which announced the principle that racial discrimination in education is unacceptable, at least as a presumptive matter. And of course, it's one thing if you have a school district that's seeking to segregate on the basis that certain students of a certain race are inferior and therefore don't belong with the others. But I think it's always been a struggle for the court to reconcile that principle with the idea, well, what if you have genuine good faith efforts by a school to integrate or to at least diversify their student body? So it's not a matter of keeping students out, it's a matter of including students. And so what you've had since the 50s, going into the 60s and 70s, is programs which are designed to diversify the student body. And the Supreme Court's first statement on that was in a case called Bakke, where the University of California, Davis Medical School, reserved a number of places in its class for selected underrepresented racial and ethnic minorities. And the challenger was white, who asserted that it was a violation of his equal protection rights because he couldn't qualify for any of those places. And the court was receptive to his argument that even if what the university is doing is a genuine effort to diversify the student body, it's still consideration of race, and that is still presumptively illegitimate. We have to be on the lookout for any state government actor who is considering race. And so we're going to apply a higher standard, even if what the government actor is asserting is that what we're trying to do here is diversify the student body, as opposed to exclude members of races.
So the issue has evolved in the eyes of the court to a point where, I mean, it has not undone affirmative action programs across the country, but their position has evolved.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think the fundamental principle is the same, which is that any consideration of race is illegitimate, at least as a starting point. And the question becomes, what does the government actor in question have to show in order for the program to be sustained by the court? And what the court uses the label of strict scrutiny. Anytime government considers race, where the court is going to apply strict scrutiny, what that means is that the government is going to have a compelling interest to do what it's doing, and its means are going to have to be necessary. Basically saying that There isn't another way. There isn't a race-neutral way of reaching the same end. So that's what the court has been dealing with, not only in Bakke, but also in the Grutter case from 2003, 10 years ago, which involved the program of the University of Michigan Law School.
Yes.
And just yesterday, we have the program of the University of Texas Law School. But in all three instances, the court is pretty much doing the same thing, which is saying, racial consideration of race is presumptively unconstitutional and illegitimate. Has the government made the necessary showing to legitimize the program?
Well, now this decision from yesterday orders lower courts in Texas to review more critically admissions policy in that state, which uses race in part
Correct.
To admit students at the University of Texas. What would this more critical assessment look at exactly?
After the Supreme Court's 2003 decision in Grutter, again, that's the University of Michigan Law School case, I think what the lower courts started to do was to give universities the benefit of the doubt. And for all practical purposes, the onus of proving that the program, the race-conscious admission program in question was unconstitutional, was being placed on the plaintiff. So typically it's the white applicant who is seeking admission to the university who is claiming that the consideration of race is illegitimate and unconstitutional. And
that's what happened in Texas.
And that's what happened in Texas, right? That's the claim by the plaintiff, Fisher. She's saying, my race was wrongfully considered. Every applicant's race was wrongfully considered. And so what the court said yesterday, which it probably didn't say sufficiently in Grutter, is that because we're talking about consideration of race, again, that's presumptively unconstitutional, the burden is on the government actor. So here it would be the government university, the state
the
university.
Public university.
Correct, the public university. It would be the public university's burden to establish that that its consideration of race is justified by the compelling interest of achieving the benefits that flow from a diverse student body, and that it has exhausted race-neutral alternatives. And that's a tough argument for the University of Texas to make, to the extent that it has employed various race-neutral alternatives for years, and it's had pretty good success.
And that is exactly Abigail Fisher's case.
Right.
And I think we should clarify at this point that the admissions policies at the University of Texas and at other universities, as I understand it, employ both. There is a formula that employs both a race-neutral formula,
yes,
and a where race is taken into consideration.
Correct.
And Ms. Fisher claims, correct me if I'm wrong, that the race-neutral program has achieved racial diversity in and of itself.
And that's exactly right. So her point is that the University of Texas's consideration of race is no longer necessary. And that's what the University of Texas would have to prove.
There's an issue of what's called critical mass. That is apparently a crucial phrase in this debate, and universities are using this when it comes to student diversity. Explain what that means, please, and why that's important.
Okay, that's a trick question. The reason I say that is because that is becoming the issue, and what's so interesting about yesterday's opinion is that critical mass was mentioned. I actually did a search. Critical mass as a concept was mentioned twice. And because in the Grutter case, Justice Kennedy, who was the author of yesterday's majority opinion,
yes,
he was very critical. Oh, I shouldn't say that. He was very hostile to the notion of critical mass. You know, this is a manipulable, subjective idea. But I think what universities are going for when they say that they're trying to achieve critical mass, What their claim is that they have to have sufficient numbers of students of underrepresented minority groups so that those students, first, don't feel isolated. They don't feel like they're constantly being asked to serve as the spokesperson for their particular group. So it's a means of removing isolation, sufficient numbers to prevent isolation, a feeling of isolation, and also sufficient numbers to show that there is diversity even within particular minority groups, right? So outsiders looking in to that particular group couldn't characterize that group as all being the same because every group has diversity within it.
Okay.
So we have to have sufficient numbers, and that's what's meant by critical mass. And the trick is, when has that been achieved? And
how do you measure that?
Right, because you can't – one principle the court has repeated over and over again is – it's improper for the university to pursue a particular numerical target. So the universities cannot say, we have critical mass of this particular racial or ethnic group once we have 15%.
And point to a number.
Correct.
Okay.
That's what they can't do, and that makes it very frustrating. And the oral argument in the Fisher case decided yesterday, there were repeated questions by the more conservative members of the court, you know, when have you achieved critical mass? We need to know that. And in the opinion yesterday, on the other hand, that issue wasn't really even addressed. But I think that is one issue that remains on the back burner and will come back to haunt us all.
I have to ask you about Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg's comment. She was the lone dissenter. She was the one in the 7-1. She wrote that the race-neutral segment of Texas's program achieved diversity only because of, quote, de facto racial segregation in Texas's neighborhoods and schools, unquote.
Yeah. What's interesting is Texas has employed, several states have done this, one of their race-neutral approaches is to accept for admission at the state university every student who falls within the top 10% of their high school class. So it's known colloquially as the top 10% plan. So you automatically receive admission just by being in the top 10%. And that's done a pretty good job of generating respectable numbers of underrepresented minorities simply because schools tend to be concentrated in certain areas with minorities. So naturally, if you're going to take top 10% of a particular area of Texas, you might get that group might be entirely Mexican American.
Right.
And that has the effect of generating. And I think her point was, let's not kid ourselves into thinking that this top 10% thing is a race neutral alternative. It's designed to improve the numbers of underrepresented groups.
I think a key question that I feel obligated to ask you, as we look forward here, if race neutral methods are found to be diversifying student bodies, then would race based policies be in greater jeopardy?
Absolutely, yeah. And I think that's one thing that's coming out of yesterday's decision. The more that universities are made to explain, made to justify their policies, the harder it's going to be if race-neutral alternatives are working, because the university would be in the position of saying, we need to do this in order to achieve the benefits that flow from diversity. But if the university is already getting the results, it's already getting the requisite critical mass of the particular groups, then why do you need to consider race anymore? And it would be unconstitutional for the university to do so.
Very, very interesting. Phil Puccillo is an MSU law professor and Supreme Court watcher. We've been talking about yesterday's ruling with regard to affirmative action. Thanks, Phil.
Thank you, Mark.